Blog Talk Radio.
Spectrum technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Yeah, what's going on, everybody? This is the January 26th, 2020 episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. I am your host, James Bell. I am the lead editor for the Boxing Source website. You could catch boxing articles at theboxingsource.net. I also serve as the lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. You could catch articles on the CHT on sports.com as well. And you could catch us on social media through Facebook, The Boxing Source, Twitter at Boxing Source 2. Instagram at The Boxing Source, and YouTube, look up The Boxing Source channel and you can find videos there. Number to dial is 347-237-5539. Once again, that is 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue and you'll be able to give your take on the sport of boxing. Going through this show here, I pretty much have a few things to cover. But of course, the sporting world has been rocked by what happened earlier today in California as a helicopter crash took place this morning, and former Laker great Kobe Bryant was in that helicopter, him along with eight other people that has been recently reported through the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department did not survive the crash. Kobe Bryant has passed away at the age of 41 years old. Included in the crash was his oldest daughter. They were on the way to a youth basketball game. I think that his daughter was supposed to be involved in. Things with the helicopter. It was a failure in the helicopter. We'll get more information on what happened that caused the crash later on. Laker great, guy that was a member of the Lakers for 20 seasons, was the 13th overall pick in the NBA draft, originally drafted to the Charlotte Hornets, but was traded to the Los Angeles Lakers in a draft day trade. So he was, included in that roster along with when they acquired Shaquille O'Neal. He was, of course, part of the Laker team when Shaquille O'Neal joined the Lakers from being a member of the Orlando Magic. He eventually won three NBA championships together. Kobe ended up staying with the Lakers when Shaq left for Miami. And then later on down the line, Kobe Bryant won NBA championships against the Orlando Magic and the Boston Celtics for him to have five NBA championships. He was an 18-time All-Star and is known as one of the greatest players of this generation and among the greatest players of all time. Know that he did attend a few boxing events over the course of his life, and he has been, acquainted with some boxing superstars over the course of his life. So I know that you'll eventually hear from multiple boxers in reference to paying homage to Kobe Bryant. I know that multi-division world champion Clarissa Shields has done that earlier, and so I know that we'll be getting more from more noted boxers or columnists in the sport of boxing or promoters in reference to the passing of Kobe Bryant. So definitely wanted to open with that, as the sports world has, been rocked by this news of Kobe Bryant passing at the age of 41. Now, just moving forward here, we have the events that did take place at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. He had the main event there as, former two-division world champion Danny Garcia took on Ivan Redkach in the main event there at Barclays Center. He had Danny Garcia coming in with the record of 35 wins and two losses. Of course, he, two losses to Keith Thurman and to Sean Porter. Keith Thurman bout was a unification bout of sorts, and then he had the opportunity to get that WBC welterweight championship back in September of 2018 against Sean Porter, but ended up losing by decision there. And had a fight last year against Adrian Granados where he scored a KO victory. And, was waiting to challenge Errol Spence Jr. For the WBC and IBF welterweight championships after Errol Spence won by decision against Sean Porter. But, of course, with the circumstances that happened with Errol Spence and his car accident, that made him unavailable to fight at this particular date of January 25th, as it was planned for Errol Spence and Danny Garcia to fight on January 25th. So ended up keeping the date for Danny Garcia and had Ivan Redkach as his opponent. Redkach coming in with a record of 23 wins, 4 losses, and 1 draw. He had a recent win over Devin Alexander. That was in June of 2019. Did, have earlier fights where he lost to guys in lower weight divisions, but then, moved up to welterweight, and he did score 2 KO victories in 2019 before his fight against Danny Garcia. And so, this is something for Danny Garcia to kind of like keep himself within, contention and things like that. within the welterweight division. He had served as the, you know, the top guy in the WBC rankings, and you know, also has been placed in the WBO rankings as well. Actually, with the WBC correction, he is placed at number two. He's also was placed at number two in the WBA rankings under Yordanis Ugas. But, you know, he still, you know, was floated around as a contender for a world championship. And so, you know, this particular bout was, you know, have him still active in the ring against an opponent in Ivan Rekach. And, you know, this is kind of like something where, for me, I highly favored Danny Garcia to, you know, win this particular bout. And, you know, for him to, I guess, kind of like see if he would be able to, you know, get back into his little streak or whatnot. But, you know, with Rekach, they're kind of being in a southpaw stance of sorts, kind of like semi-nullified the effectiveness of Danny Garcia's left hook, which is usually what he uses to get his advantage over most of his opponents. But, you know, here it was, you know, basically Garcia taking advantage of, you know, his, you know, experience that he's had in the ring against, you know, higher caliber opponents than what Ivan Rekach had. And this, you know, led for him to get the unanimous decision victory over Ivan Rekach. You'll get one score of 118-110 and two scores of 117-111, which means 10 rounds to two and two scores of 9 rounds to three. You know, this is, you know, for some, they would say that this was a fairly, you know, uneventful main event thing. You know, no necessary knockdowns, you know, nothing, you know, where you kind of had your Rekach in real trouble, or serious trouble. Up until the before the ninth round, when a physician ended up, you know, scoping a Rekach to see if he was fine, if he was okay. But, you know, Rekach wanted to, you know, have more action and things like that. But, there was this, you know, it just showed that Rekach was overmatched on this particular bout. So Danny Garcia, you know, gets the win. He has his record now at 36 wins and two losses. He's still, you know, pretty much trying to figure out what's going to be happening next in the welterweight division. Like, you know, you still have, like I said, the unified welterweight champion, Errol Spence Jr., trying to figure out what he's going to do next. We have talked about what is, you know, potentially out there for Errol Spence Jr. We've had a previous guest on the show say that Errol Spence might not be in action for all of 2020, while, you know, others have said that he may be returning to the ring by summer of this year. and it could possibly be against the WBA champion Manny Pacquiao. So it's basically the welterweight division is kind of like locked on where Errol Spence Jr. is at this particular point, coming off of that major accident that he had in Texas, and whether he is, you know, able to get back in the ring sometime this year. If he's good enough to be training, and then after that, if he'll be able to get back into the ring this year. So that's kind of, you know, what we're looking at here with Danny Garcia, is that he's basically going to be having that waiting game, you know, out there. He's going to be, you know, playing that waiting game to see what happens with Errol Spence Jr. I mean, I don't see anything where they're kind of like considering him having a rematch with Sean Porter, with Sean Porter being the number one contender for the WBC version of the welterweight championship. You have your Dennis Ugas that's out there that, you know, will be fighting Mike Dallas Jr. So that leaves, you know, Ugas pretty much occupied. You have to see what's up with Sergey Lipinets as well. So a lot of things that are still up in the air or still need to be sorted out in the welterweight division. But, you know, with the two or three top guys, of course, you have the WBO champion, Terrence Crawford. You got to see what's going to be up with him. You know, there was a possibility that he may fight Sean Porter, but that's being dismissed. And like I said, Manny Pacquiao, we don't know what's going to be next with him. So we pretty much have to, you know, sit it out and see what happens with those guys before we see if Danny Garcia will be back in action sometime later this year. That's one thing that has to be sorted out before we, you know, get things situated within the welterweight division. So, you know, those that have followed me over the years have not been much of a fan of Danny Garcia. So with this, you know, with this performance that has happened here, that's, you know, not, you know, you wouldn't necessarily consider it as being very impressive, then I don't know what to, you know, I don't know what I could pretty much make out of it. Like, he had a red catch and, you know, a couple of issues over the course of the bout, but, you know, nothing to really, you know, I would say seal the deal of sorts. Nothing to, you know, close the show. So, you know, with that being said, I can't, like, pit Danny Garcia against those top guys and say, hey, I think that he would be able to have that chance to win against those guys. You know, one other guy that I haven't mentioned on here is Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman, who, you know, did lose to Manny Pacquiao in the summer of last year. You know, seems like he's, you know, been good chilling. You know, he's been chilling. He said that he had like an injury, you know, from the fight or something like that, and, you know, he's been chilling. No real news about him getting back into the ring either, and a possibility of a rematch between Danny Garcia and Keith Thurman would be something that would be pivotal to see if they would still be among those top guys in the welterweight division. But, you know, with Keith Thurman, it's almost like he's going on another vacation like he did after he had unified the titles beforehand with the WBA and WBC. And that's still like another good matchup that could be made, but you know, with the uncertainty of Keith Thurman's career, that is, you know, not quite in the cards as of right now. So that's, you know, what we got out of that particular main event. Like I said, not very much coming out of it, just with Danny Garcia getting that unanimous decision win over Ivan Rekach. You also did have a former unified super welterweight champion, Jarrett Hurd, return to the ring after his loss to Julian J-Rock Williams over in Fairfax, Virginia. He was going up against Francisco Santana. Like I said, Jarrett Hurd with that lone loss of his career, 24-1 against Santana, who is 25 wins, 7 losses, and 1 draw. Santana came off of a loss to Abel Ramos last year by unanimous decision. And, of course, you have Jarrett Hurd, who, you know, was pretty much followed as far as, like, you know, what he was going to do after his loss to Julian Williams. I mean, first off, he chose not to have the rematch against Julian J-Rock Williams last year. And then you had this announcement of him getting back to the ring to be at the Barclays Center against Francisco Santana. And he had, you know, those intentions of, you know, later on down the line having a rematch against Julian Williams. But, you know, now we see that Julian Williams losing last week, you know, in an upset. That kind of, you know, threw things off as far as, like, the super welterweight division is concerned, with Williams losing to Jason Rosario in Philadelphia. So now that the, you know, the titles that Jarrett Hurd lost to Julian Williams is now in the possession of Jason Rosario. So that kind of, like, threw off the plans a little bit there for Jarrett Hurd. You know, I've talked with him, you know, over a year ago in reference to what his plans were going to be up to this particular point. And he was considering moving up to the middleweight division, but that hinged on, you know, him having his, you know, fight against J-Rock Williams, and then eventually going up against, you know, Charlo. And then after having that fight with Charlo, then he would move up to the middleweight division. But now with his loss that he had to J-Rock Williams, that kind of threw things off a little bit. Now he's still at 154 pounds, and he had his fight at the Barclays Center against Francisco Santana, who was basically at welterweight before this fight. And he ends up getting the unanimous decision win there. And, you know, right after that, he said that he would like to face the WBC super welterweight champion Jermell Charlo, who had recently won his title back against Tony Harrison in December. So, you know, that's what, you know, that's a brief thing of, you know, that particular fight. Just getting a caller in here right now from the 205. You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show. What's good?
What's going on, James? It's Mike Brady, man. How you doing?
Doing good, man. Just, you know, going through what's, you know, happened today, man. It's a crazy day in the sports world.
Yeah, it is, man. You never know. You know, you never know. Got to be very mindful and just see the day, man. Just be very into the moment, you know, and not let the past or the future, you know, take away from what you can do now. So you're right.
Yeah, exactly, man. You know, it's crazy when you have one of the most impactful athletes in this generation, you know, lose a life, man, the way that it happens, man. And you know, for me, like, listening to it, like, when it first broke, just, you know, had me in absolute shock. And I just couldn't, you know, bring myself to, you know, believe something like that. It just took me, you know, a good while for me to, you know, process it all, you know, after it happened, man.
Yeah. And, you know, find out more details, you know, you're going to hear that, you know, you hear that his daughter passed too, and, you know, when they probably highlight the other people and stuff, it just, yeah, it sucks.
Yeah, man, it's, you know, it's something that's like, you know, blown me up to this particular point. You know, right now, you know, kind of like going through, you know, what happened over at the Barclays Center last night. You had Danny Garcia get that unanimous decision victory over Ivan Redcats, and Jared Hurd score a victory over Francisco Santana. It's like kind of like a overall, it was a, you know, fairly uneventful card as far as like the Showtime telecast had. No knockout victories. Nobody seriously hurt, but, you know, just, you know, having the guys that were favored going into the bout pretty much have fairly easy victories there. So what are your thoughts about, you know, what happened in this particular card on Showtime?
Yeah, Jared Hurd, you could see that he was definitely working on certain stuff. So him using his size and using his reach is definitely going to be foreign to him. So I don't think we would expect him to naturally just, you know, do that easily without having practice. And, you know, people practice years to get good at that. So, you know, for us to expect him to just come out arms ablaze without doing what he already know, you know, it's probably take a little time. But I can respect him for definitely trying to stick to a game plan per se. And, you know, like he sees that something like the way that he fights is not something that's prolonged, that's going to be that he can keep up prolonged. You know, his career won't continue if he continue fighting like that. And so recognizing that he trying to change stuff and box or whatever, so it's going to look ugly before it looks better, if it ever looks better. But, yeah. So, I mean, that was that. And then Danny Garcia, you know, Danny Garcia is a counterpuncher, so him fighting Redcats in the beginning, you know, he was – countering Redcats and hitting him with them big shots, and Redcats felt that. And once he felt that, you know, he was like, yeah, I'm not, you know, let me not be as aggressive, because if I keep this up, this dude gonna probably knock me out. So he chilled out, you know, with being the aggressor or whatever. And so, which we all knew meant that Danny Garcia wasn't gonna get a knockout. If you're not coming at him, then he 9 times out of 10 ain't gonna knock you out, because he needs you to, you know, like Bruce Lee, use your force against you, that type of thing. So, yeah. But what I will say, you know, Danny Garcia, people take him for granted in that, you know, we try to, like, say, like, he's, like, of the top echelon. He's probably, like, one of the worst top echelon fighters. I think if he fought Terrence Crawford, he would touch Terrence Crawford. Would he win the fight? Probably not, no. But he would definitely touch Terrence Crawford. And, you know, like, could he knock Terrence Crawford out? Sure, why not? But it just really depends on how Terrence Crawford fight. But he would definitely touch Terrence Crawford, in my opinion. And either Terrence Crawford would have to be mindful of, like, what he's doing in terms of, you know, like, standing in the pocket too long and that type of stuff. And I think that, yeah, what's his name? Could definitely touch him, though. But
I'd say that, Garcia could, you know, definitely touch him, especially going through, you know, what we saw in Terrence Crawford's last fight that they had against Kowalewskis. He was being timed by Kowalewskis with the right hand counter. So Garcia could study that and, you know, do something to kind of like affect Crawford and, you know, maybe put him down to the canvas, because, you know, that should have been counted as a knockdown score by Kowalewskis, but they didn't count it. But, you know, my thing is that, you know, Garcia should have, you know, went ahead and tried to take that fight when it was offered to him. I don't think that they're going to, you know, kind of like offer something like that to him again. You know, even with him being ranked number one in the WBO right now. You have to see, like I said, what would be next for Danny Garcia, as there's like so many unknowns that are out there in reference to Errol Spence Jr. and what Errol Spence Jr. does next. And I don't see like any possible rematches for mm-hmm. Danny Garcia against, Sean Porter or against Keith Thurman. So that's what we currently have now at this particular point. Let me see if I can add in another caller from the 813. What's going on? You're on the Boxing Source Radio Show.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Terrell calling in from Tampa. Just once again, just again on that Garcia fight. It was interesting, but Red Cast just simply didn't have enough firepower for him, despite being a softball and everything. Just didn't have enough firepower, and now that's enough experience on that pro level. And when you fast forward to the post fight, right? Like you're saying, who's basically the next viable opponent for Danny Garcia? It's not going to be Errol Spence Jr. because we know he's out of commission right now, despite what his camp is saying. Pacquiao, you would think that could happen, given that he's on the PBC banner, things like that. But at the same time, we already know what that says. Pacquiao's political career takes precedence first now, and so it's going to be some somewhat of a significant delay for him to even announce and sit down and start looking at the opponents. So it definitely won't be Pacquiao. The one good thing I like about this, Garcia gets to fight in January, first part of the year. So with that said, he should really have three fights this year, if not four. He says he wants to stay active. He's been inactive for 9 months prior to this fight. And even in a post-fight interview, he said that he had to lose quite a bit of weight, I think around 25 pounds, in order to get down to this fight. And he said that may have affected his ability to be dynamic. He's a good fighter, not necessarily great, but he's a good fighter. As we already know, Danny Garcia is your classic common puncher. He's not necessarily the type that's necessarily going to be coming forward all the time on the attack. His main thing is counter punching. But I was looking on Boxing Twitter, and one fighter that threw his name out there that he would love to fight Garcia would be Lippin Yates. And that would be somewhat of an interesting fight because he has more on the channel. And at the same time, he's been a belt holder, so he knows he has what it takes to be on that championship level. And he would definitely have more experience and more firepower going against Danny Garcia in a supposed fight. Hopefully, we'll probably see Garcia back around, I'm guessing April, May, something like that. But, I mean, there's some interesting fights, but we definitely don't see no top-level fights with Garcia with so many people just have their own situations they're locked up into, whether it be Spence with the recovery, Pacquiao with his political career, and he's only going to fight twice a year anyway, if that. I mean, so basically he has to be a PBC fighter for the most, as we already know. But, I mean, Garcia, it was a solid performance. It wasn't great, you know, but he did what he had to do. He's very sharp in his punches and his jabs, things like that. So I appreciate his performance, so, but nothing critical to say about that. There you go.
Yeah, with you bringing up that suggestion of Danny Garcia fighting Sergey Lippin, yes, that's, you know, one of the guys that, you know, is out there in the welterweight division that's, you know, waiting for his next type of step-up fight at welterweight to kind of like see if he is a serious contender for a welterweight championship. And, you know, Danny Garcia, like I said, having this early fight in the year, he should be able to fight again, whether it's like in May or June or something like that, to kind of like, you know, have him still be active in the ring. Because, you know, yeah, Manny Pacquiao has his whole thing with his senatorial duties. Errol Spence Jr., we don't know what his actual status is as far as, like, getting back into the ring, regardless of, you know, what he said to, who was it, Brian Kenny or whatever it was. So, you know, why not have that fight between Danny Garcia and Sergey Lipinets, particularly when I don't think the WBO has defined who their mandatory contender is now. You know, since you know, Terrence Crawford honored his mandatory against his opponent then in December. So, you know, right now, you know, with his win over Kovalevskis, he doesn't have to fight a mandatory for another, you know, 12, 11 months. And the WBO has to make that decision of, like, okay, who's going to, you know, fight for that mandatory position? So, you know, until then, why not have Danny Garcia against Sergey Lipinets for that WBO mandatory spot? And that way, you know, whoever wins, they would be able to face Terrence Crawford, you know, for the WBO title by the end of this year. Because, you know, I don't necessarily see Crawford fighting, you know, those other world, you know, world title holders at welterweight. So why not have that belt, have that fight take place, so that that'll give a little bit more clarification on who Terrence Crawford would be facing later on in 2020, you know? Terrell, what do you think about what Jared Hurd was doing? Because I have a couple of comments to follow up his, you know, Jared Hurd's performance.
Yeah, that fight was interesting too, given the fact that Hurd had to change in trainer, the change in demeanor, and just put on a new person per se and everything. The guy he fought came up from 147, as usual. Jared was definitely physically the larger guy inside the ring. But I'll tell you something, that I took notice of. Jared, he's lost his swag. He's lost that dog in him. And I'm not saying it's totally gone, because he's definitely competitive. And definitely competed last night. But, you know, prior to him losing his title to J-Rock last year, right, we typically, when you see Jared get in the ring, that dude, he's just coming to fight. He's just going to beat you down, use his size, and he still has some great tools to help you those things as well. But to me, I didn't really see that dog in him last night. And even when in some of the interviews up to the fight, he said that he ultimately regretted it was very hard for him not to take the rematch with J-Rock again right away, instead of walking away from that. And, of course, going on to this fight against the guy last night. So, I mean, somebody's going to need to just to motivate him. And the reason why I say that, if you don't bring that dog in you on that championship level, then someone's going to come in and beat you. And at this point, being that he's without his titles, right, a loss would be a huge setback for him. Of course, that didn't happen last time. We know that. But even going to his next fight, if it's someone, if it's in the top 10, top 20, something like that, if he don't bring that dog in him and get that swag back, he could definitely suffer a loss, and that would definitely be a setback for him. Because even at this point, J-Rock lost his titles. We know that to Rosario. So at this point, even right now, a rematch between Hurd and J-Rock is not really viable right now. I mean, there's not a public demand for that. Even Hurd himself says he wants to redo that fight. That's his only loss. He wants to avenge his loss. We know that. But at this point, I just hope he just gets that dog back in, that we're accustomed to seeing with him. So that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah, you know, with Jared Hurd, he did have some comments about him, you know, fighting Jermell Charlo. You know, that was, you know, kind of like part of his plans when You know, I spoke with him before he went into that fight that he had on the Wilder Fury card on December 1st, 2018, in that he wanted to, you know, have a couple of fights at 154 pounds before moving up to 160. And, you know, with that loss to Williams, that, you know, threw off his plans, and he had to, you know, see about regrouping. And, you know, him kind of like changing his overall style and things like that, you know, makes him a different type of fighter to work with. And, you know, while, you know, this, his fight style has changed, it may have changed his overall hunger that he had before. Yeah, he's not, you know, basically trying to walk down fighters anymore, or at least not in this particular bout that he had. So he wanted to work on his defensive prowesses in this particular matchup. And so, you know, maybe that gives a couple of different wrinkles to his overall game, but will that be a factor if he goes on to face Jermell Charlo for the WBC Super Welterweight Championship? J-Rock said he's going to, you know, exercise his rematch clause against Jason Rosario, so that fight will be coming up later on down the line this year. And then if they do organize for Jared Hurd to fight Jermell Charlo, that would be, you know, another fight that's later on down the line, because, you know, Charlo had plans to, you know, try to unify with J-Rock before J-Rock lost. Now it's like, okay, who does he fight next? He wasn't necessarily interested in, you know, giving Harrison a third fight. Erickson Lubin is the number one contender right now, and he's already defeated Erickson Lubin. So, I mean, other than Brian Carlos Castaño, Jared Hurd's the only other option, and that's probably the, you know, most lucrative fight that could be made at this particular point for Jermell Charlo. So I think that is what's going to end up being next for Jermell Charlo and Jared Hurd. So, I mean, that's, you know, kind of like what we got here in this at this juncture right now. So that's what we had.
Even in Hurd's interviews, he's saying that in a change-up style, he said that before he lost the title to J-Rock, he always wanted to be in Fight of the Year candidates. And then from that fight to J-Rock lost, where he got he beat up in that fight, he now says, wants to work on be more defensive-minded in that regard and employ that style. Now, with that said, that's cool. That's necessarily went excite the crowd. Not necessarily crowd pleasing, but even if he does get into a fight with Charlo, that's going to be a war. Because if he sits back trying to play the defensive fighter and change up in that fight, that'll be, in my regard, a bad strategy, because Charlo is definitely going to come out swinging and being aggressive the entire contest. And from what I saw last night from Hurd, it doesn't suggest that he's a defensive genius at this point. So if Hurd and Charlo does fight, it's going to be a fight of your candidate, because it's going to be a war. Just due to the fact that how aggressive Charlo is in his style. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I think Terrell owned some. It's definitely, like, so he got hit less. I think most people would agree on that, with the little style of, like, ducking and rolling, using movement at the waist. He got hit less. And I think him using that in spots will save him from getting hit when he uses it in spots. But at the end of the day, when that stopped working, when that doesn't work as effectively against like a top level fighter like a J-Rock or a Charlo, he gonna go back to what he know and hopefully try to bully them. But now if he could do that movement at the waist and also counter from that would be a different story, because, you know, he would dodge punches and then make people pay for it. Now that would be game changing for him, but just how it stands now, him just using it to move and all he's doing is just expending energy, he's gonna have to go back to the style that works for him. And you know, at least in that last fight, he didn't look strong at all against J-Rock. He didn't look strong against J-Rock. And J-Rock was kind of pushing him around. And so Charlo, it might be similar against Charlo, just depending on how strong you look out of though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the thing about it is that Charlo is, you know, one guy that is a power puncher. You know, he sets up his power shots a lot. I don't think, he kind of like sets it up as far as like trying to counter with his power shots. He doesn't necessarily open things up with the jab as much as I feel that he should. In particular against, you know, Tony Harrison, for the majority of that fight, it was Tony Harrison beating him to the punch multiple times. And, you know, also getting in combinations before, you know, Jermell Charlo could throw a shot. So if Jared Hurd could work on being more active with his hands, trying to, you know, become first against his opponents, then maybe he'll have, you know, a little bit of success if he does, you know, go up against Jermell Charlo. But, you know, that's something that, you know, remains to be seen if he's going to be, you know, able to continuously work on that and solidify that for him to, you know, have a shot to defeat Jermell Charlo if they do fight later on down the line. For those listening live on Blog Talk Radio, you could call in 347-237-5539 and be sure to catch the podcast later on down the line on Anchor.fm or Spotify or iTunes or Google Podcasts. Moving on, you have the fight card coming up next week that is on DAZN that is headlined by the WBO middleweight championship fight between Demetrius Andrade and Luke Keeler. But I want to talk about another fight that is on this card. No, I'm not talking about the Jake Paul Ali Gibb fight. No, I'm not talking about that fight. I'm talking about the IBF Super Featherweight Championship fight between Tevin Farmer and JoJo Diaz. This one here is, I think, is going to be not only like the fight of the night, but I think it's going to be one of the better fights that we're going to see over the next, you know, few months of 2020. Both fighters are looking forward for this matchup. You know, JoJo Diaz, you know, initially called out Tevin Farmer after, you know, winning a version of the WBA title. You know, they talked a lot of smack face to face on a couple of occasions. And so, you know, Tevin Farmer said, like, yo, man, just go ahead and make this fight. Make this fight happen. I don't care what needs to be done. Make this fight happen. And so it is official. It's going to happen. And you're going to see, you know, someone with the defensive prowess of a Tevin Farmer against Joseph JoJo Diaz, who is really focused on, you know, coming forward, and once he comes forward, tries to, you know, wear down his opponents, you know, before he gets the advantage in that particular fight. This is, you know, Diaz's second attempt at a, you know, former world championship, as he did lose to Gary Russell Jr. In the featherweight division for that WBC version of the featherweight title. So this will be his second chance, and he said he's, you know, willing and ready to go. You know, I had overheard him in the conference call, you know, last week, and, you know, he's very confident that he'll be able to, you know, wear down Tevin Farmer, and that, you know, Tevin Farmer is not necessarily as offensively skilled as a Gary Russell Jr. is, and that he feels that he'll be able to corner or trap Tevin Farmer to wear him down to nullify what Farmer does defensively. So that's something that, you know, I'm kind of like looking forward to for that particular fight. Any thoughts on that fight and how that could possibly turn out?
Yeah, for me, this is all about Tevin Farmer, belt holder. We know that. And main reason why for me I'm interested in this fight is I do expect Farmer to win this fight. This fight it probably will be a barn burner. Jojo Diaz, especially is a two-time world title challenger, has came up short, but nevertheless, he has another opportunity here with Tevin Farmer. And really, my main interest for Farmer, his name continues to be mentioned in other fights, right? So, of course, before you can other fights can come to fruition, you got to knock out what's in front of you. So I hope that he can just maintain his focus, show us some skill level, show us that he is the champion that he is, like when he last beat Joe Nocaro, things like that. But like I said, I definitely expect a barn burner. I mean, it's going to be interesting. And my main thing, I want Farmer to come out of this fight victorious. No knockdowns, not suffering any knockdowns, and definitely not suffering being hurt in that regard, stuff like that. But I do expect Farmer to win in a barn burner. But like I said, I'm interested for him for other fights he continues to be mentioning. Even though he has history, been offered a contract, I think I forgot whose team. I think Tank's team that missed last year where he got off the contract and reportedly turned it down and things like that. But like I said, he's been mentioned in other fights, so I do want him to come out victorious so we can see what's going forward for him.
Yeah, he did have the whole ordeal about him potentially fighting Gervonta Tank Davis, and the whole thing with the offer on one side through Matchroom Boxing, and then Mayweather Promotions and Leonard Ellerbe responded with kind of like an offer on it of their own, and Tevin Farmer declined it, and once he declined it, they ended up moving on. Now with Gervonta Davis moving on, him having that fight in Atlanta against Uriorkis Gamboa, winning by stoppage in the 12th round, and now he's kind of like going into the whole pay-per-view side of things this year. That left Tevin Farmer basically in the cold in that instance. And now he has his fight against Jojo Diaz where there has to be, a couple of things that need to be ironed out for him, as this is kind of like the last, I think it's the last fight that he's, jointly promoted with Matchroom Boxing and his own. So he has to, come through in this particular fight to see what would be next for him. He did call out a particular fighter that he said that he wanted to fight after this particular bout with Jojo Diaz if he scores a win. And that could, kind of determine where he ends up going after this particular bout. But I'll get into that a little bit more after I hear from Brother Mike Grady. What you got?
Jojo Diaz, I forgot which fight. I remember the name, but I forgot the style of Jojo Diaz. Who was the major fight you said he fought against now?
Gary Russell Jr.
And it didn't turn out well for him.
He didn't end up stay consistent in that particular bout. He had early success, but then ended up fading later on down the line and lost by unanimous decision there.
Gotcha. So I can't really speak on it because I forgot how he fights. I've watched a couple of his fights, but I just don't remember. Tevin Farmer is our close to modern day sweet pea, in the way that he fights at times. And I like watching Tevin Farmer fight. He's exciting to me. And he's just vulnerable enough to where his fights are always interesting. that's not a good thing for him. But, I mean, he always has. Even when he went in, his fights still seem interesting. He'd just be like, he'd be like an inch away from getting, like, knocked silly, it seemed like to me. But, yeah, I like watching him. In terms of the other cards, Andrade, I'm not sure. It'd be nice to see them fight, you know, the top-level fighters. I mean, maybe that's because people don't want to fight him. Maybe it's because of whatever other reason. But, you know, it'd be nice to see the top-level fighters fight each other so we can kind of know who is the top guy, as opposed to everybody just having this claim to the throne and it's just unwarranted claim without people actually putting it all on the line for us to really say. But in welterweight, we can say, you know, through test by fire, who probably has the greatest claim to be number one. And to me, that would be, I'm saying the subjects, but to me, that would be Errol Spence. And not trying to be funny, Pacquiao's still up there, you know, because while we think that Errol Spence would beat Pacquiao, which I think everybody would say that, and we think that Terrence Crawford would beat Pacquiao, Pacquiao beat Keith Thurman, which Keith Thurman would have been in earlier terms competitive against everybody else. I mean, I think most people would say Errol Spence was favored against him, but hell, in terms of beating Danny and Sean, Keith Thurman beat both of those guys. And then Pacquiao beat him. I think Sean would be a bad matchup for Pacquiao, but all I'm saying is the top guy, in my opinion, is Errol Spence, and then you got a couple other guys who under him, but Terrence Crawford need to fight somebody just for him to just claim that he's number one and stuff, because otherwise it's unwarranted. All right, I'm done.
Hey, Mike.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mike, just to cap it off on what you said in terms of speaking on the welterweight division, I'm sure you guys can both remember that probably about 2-3 years ago, during this very show, we were basically still in the Mayweather era, that is, when Mayweather was still active. So that I don't want to say it's 4 or 5 years ago. Maybe it's been that long. I don't know. But Mayweather was still active. And at that point, we had a lot of people undefeated, Thurman, Porter, people like that. And everybody was basically fine holding out to get that Mayweather fight, that golden ticket, so you get that huge pay-per-view payday. Now you fast forward now. It's very interesting now, like Mike said. Not finally, everyone's finally fighting each other. We've had Thurman against Porter, Thurman Garcia, Pacquiao, Thurman, Porter fought, and Porter Spence, things like that. Not all these guys have finally fighting each other. Can continue to get that in other divisions, that would be truly great, particularly at 160, leading with Andre. He needs to dominate this weekend. That's what's going to get him to make him a compelling opponent to get other fights, things like that. But he just needs to fight other people, like we finally have in the welterweight division, which continues to be likely the best division in boxing in terms of action, in terms of talent at the top of the division.
Now, for me, I think we would have had some type of clarity in the middleweight division if they would have went ahead and had Canelo fighting Andrade instead of, you know, his fight against Kovalev. But they, you know, went on ahead and, you know, chose to go with that Kovalev route instead. And, you know, that kind of, like, you know, made things muddled up a little bit in the middleweight division. At least for me, I thought it was, you know, because you had Andrade that had the WBO title at the time. You had Canelo Alvarez, who, you know, had scored wins over Gennady Golovkin and over Daniel Jacobs, you know, up to that particular point. And so it would have been Canelo Alvarez and Demetrius Andrade, and that would have been, you know,
at the time, if they would have made that fight immediately, it would have probably, I think it would have been for the undisputed middleweight championship. But since they didn't go forward with that particular fight first, then they didn't go ahead and have the IBF mandatory honored and naming Canelo Alvarez the franchise champion in the WBC. Now it was like, okay, now who can you tell is the, you know, the top guy in the middleweight division? And so that just clouded everything up when you had Canelo Alvarez make the decision that he did in order to, you know, to choose to fight Sergey Kovalev instead of those guys in the middleweight division. And now with Demetrius Andrade, here he is with another one of these, you know, voluntary defenses of the WBO middleweight title, where he's not, you know, he's not fighting Jermell Charlo. And whether, you know, people say that, you know, there was an offer to Charlo or not, fact of the matter is that fight is, you know, not necessarily in the cards right now. So, you know, after this, it's like, okay, who does Andrade fight next? Because Gennady Golovkin is not going to fight him. He's concerned about fighting Kamaru Usman Mehta for his mandatory defense of his recently won IBF title. So then what's next, you know? And we had the news a couple of days ago or a few days ago that Andrade signed a 4-fight extension with Matchroom Boxing. So now with this extension that he has with Matchroom Boxing, it's like, okay, you get this extension. Now what is Matchroom going to do for you in order to, you know, advance your career, particularly in the middleweight division? You know, they've kind of, you know, done things for Gennady Golovkin. They co-promote with Gennady Golovkin. You know, they work with Daniel Jacobs. You know, he's, you know, Matchroom has got Daniel Jacobs to get that fight with, you know, Canelo Alvarez, and then he had the whole thing with Little Chavez. So now it's like, okay, Andrade, what are they going to be able to do for Demetrius Andrade? And that's something that remains to be seen right now, is what they're going to do with him. So, you know, that's kind of like what I'm looking out for with Demetrius Andrade. I mean, you do, you know, also have, you know, this fight between Daniel Roman and Mirodjan Akhmadaliyev for the Unified Super Bantamweight Championships. Daniel Roman is like one of the top guys there in the Super Bantamweight division, that has Emmanuel Navarrete, you know, one of the most active world champions out there in the sport of boxing, and also Ray Vargas there, that's, you know, still undefeated, and the WBC Super Bantamweight champ. He's going, and Daniel Roman is going up against Akhmadaliyev, who is a, you know, fairly known amateur fighter. I think he, you know, won a medal in the Olympic Games that he was involved in. They're 7-0, and, you know, a lot of people are, you know, looking forward to this particular fight. I mean, including the promoter for Tevin Farmer is kind of looking forward to this particular fight as well, Lou DiBella. So that kind of like goes into what we, you know, have in this particular fight card, with at least three fights that, you know, could potentially have lots of action. And that doesn't include the, you know, the card with Jake Paul and Ali Gibbs. So it's fairly you know, packed card. You also have Anthony Sims Jr. against Romer Angulo as part of this card as well. That'll be on the zone. So that's kind of, you know, what we have as far as like a overall stack card. I just wish it was, you know, on the first instead of Thursday, January 30th there. So, I mean, that's what we got in this particular fight card. You know. Just seeing here, I mean, that's basically what we have for, you know, that next weekend. The following weekend on the 8th, you do have Kell Brook that's going to be in action against Mark DeLuca. Guillermo Rigondeaux will face Liborio Solis, and that is part of that fight card with Gary Russell going up against Tuksuk Nyambayar for his mandatory defense of the WBC featherweight championship. So those are, you know, a couple of things that, you know, I'm kind of like looking ahead to in the month of February. And of course, you do have the WBC and Ring Magazine heavyweight championships on the line February 22nd with Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury fighting for the second time. So month of February is going to be, you know, fairly active there in the boxing scene that we have. Of course, with Wilder and Fury having their two press conferences, with the recent, well, the recent one being yesterday over in Los Angeles. So that's what we kind of like get there so far. So any thoughts about any of these other fights that are coming up in the month of February?
Well, I just want my $100 from Charles after Deontay Wilder win. That's about it.
Yeah,
I'm gonna send him a message.
yeah, you got to remind him, man, because, man, dadgummit freaking LSU beat Clemson, man. I'm still soaking about that one, so you might have to get him back on that.
Oh, y'all made a bet. Oh, you thought bet that Clemson was going in?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I was kind of upset at the result of that one. So, Terrell, what you got on it?
Give me a quick rundown. What else is going on in February? Obviously, we know about Wilder Fury 2. One other fight, too, that's of some interest to me is, I think, February 1st, Mike Dallas and Ugas. And the reason why I mentioned that, Ugas is likely, not definitely just talk at this point, is a likely opponent for Errol Spence Jr. Like Spence said, he wants to come back and fight a top opponent. We don't know who's going to be available and if he's truly ready for that. But Ugas is a tough fighter. Definitely somebody that can give him a good fight and help showcase his skills. Even with that said, we know that Spence fought Porter, beat Porter, we know that. And Porter himself narrowly beat Ugas. So that would be a good measure gauge to see where Spence is at. I think we got Kowanaki in February, too, against, I forgot the, Talenius or something like that. So it's like...
No, that's March 7th.
March, I'm sorry about that. So what else is going on in February?
Yeah, so you do have, like you said, the thing with your Dennis Ugas and Mike Dallas. That will be on February 1st. And then February 8th, you do have Kell Brook that will be in action. You have Guillermo Rigondeaux against Liborio Solis. That will be in the card in Allentown, Pennsylvania, headlined by Gary Russell Jr. against Tuksuk Nyambayar for that WBC featherweight championship. So that's kind of, you know, what we have on slate for the next couple of weeks here.
Caleb Plant, like then, one of these weekends, right?
Yeah, Caleb Plant and Fegan Butts is the 15th. That should be February 15th. And also, Ryan Garcia will be fighting Francisco Fonseca on February 14th as well. So you will have, you know, the, what does it have, King Rye? King Rye will be in action as well within the next couple of weeks.
Ryan Garcia, why did he just lead up with that? That's the main thing we need to talk about. Ryan Garcia, he has a huge Instagram and Twitter following. We know that.
well, I mean, hey, since he has a large social media following, maybe he should fight Logan Paul.
But no, just even on Ryan Garcia, I mean, he's a fighter that's continued to grow into the sport of boxing. Even though he has high aspirations, we know he's not ready for no one at the top of his division right now. We know that. But he himself said he's feeling stronger. He's getting older, of course, growing into his frame, so that's good for him. So maybe even some like I think last year, Tank said there's no way that Garcia's ready to fight him. That's a fight that's down the line because right now, if he's to fight Tank, Tank would definitely destroy him and destroy his career at this point. We know that. But as far as other fights you mentioned in February, I'm very interested in Kell Brook fighting. Had a lot of inactivity, one fight over the last year, something like that. Even that didn't look great at all, and we know that. Kell Brook himself said that he wants to have a great year. And even now, with the flux of movement in at 150, which is 154, it would definitely behoove him to come out and have a great fight, show his full skill set, and basically, in a sense, to reannounce his presence within that division. We got Rosario just locked up, grabbed two titles from J-Rock. We know that. That's probably going to come back in a rematch, more than likely, after contracts and all that things fall in place. We already know about Charlo. We know that. But it's a great opportunity for Kell Brook to announce himself and say, hey, I'm here. I am a top contender at 154. So that's probably outside of Fury and Joshua. I'm definitely more or less paying attention to Kell Brook as he wants to show us what he got. So here he is, and we're gonna see where he's at and everything with the division, because he definitely can figure within the division and figure out the top fights, but it's all about the performance, and we'll see what he does.
Yeah, right. You know, with his particular, what he could be able to do is get himself positioned to, you know, have an outside shot of fighting for one of those titles at 154 pounds. So you do have to, you know, keep on the lookout for Kell Brook in his fight that's coming up in February as well, because while he did have some aspirations of trying to see if he could get himself in a rematch against Errol Spence, but you know, he could, you know, also have potential fights against those guys that are challenging him at 154 pounds, or, you know, our current champions at 154 pounds. So that's something that we, you know, should be on the lookout for with Kell Brook after he does have his match against Mark DeLuca on February 8th, I think it's scheduled for. You know, I did mention the thing with Caleb Plant against Vincent Feigenbutz, where he's going to, you know, defend his version of the super middleweight championship. You know, he potentially could be facing, was it David Benavidez, who has the WBC version of that super middleweight championship, you know, later on down the line, that would kind of like serve as the fight for the top position at 168 pounds for some, although others may feel that Callum Smith is the top guy at 168. But, you know, we got to see how Caleb Plant does here against Feigenbutz, you know, here in the next couple of weeks, and see how he, you know, kind of like shakes his claim as, you know, one of the top guys or the top guy at 168 pounds. So, that's, you know, another thing that I'm kind of like looking out for. You do have, you know, another fighter there at super middleweight, former champion at super middleweight, Caleb Truax, will be part of that fight card as well. So that is something, you know, I'm kind of like looking out for to see what Caleb Truax does against his opponent, Ernest Amuzu. So, you know, if him getting that win could, you know, put him in position to, you know, fight for a world title later on down the line. He would probably end up being the next highest rated contender for the IBF championship if he gets his win on the 15th of February. So that's also something that I'm kind of like looking out for.
know, that pretty much like covers most of what, you know, I could say about what's happened over the course of the week in boxing, other than, you know, someone breaking into Chris Eubank Jr.'s house and just, you know, looting the stuff and taking a few things, but, you know, not taking a couple of, you know, specific valuables. So, hey, I mean, that's what I got, you know, so far. You'll get back into it next week. We'll see what happens on February 1st, and we'll talk about it February 2nd, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So be on the lookout for that. You have the sister show, The Cold Hard Truth on Sports. That is scheduled for Tuesdays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So be on the lookout for that. And like I said, the end of every show, folks, Point of Boxing is a hit and I get hit. Not the same in trade. On that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Later.